From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Friday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Ole Miss and LSU began their series last night, a night that did not go well for the Rebels, 15-2. LSU over Ole Miss, LSU up 15-0 heading to the ninth. Cole Zabowski hit one off the wall to put the Rebels on the board, at least. I think that's how that happened at that point. It kind of all ran together. But, LSU took advantage of every opportunity. James McArthur was not overly sharp. Alex Lang looked like a top 10 pick, and that's what happened last night. Is it snowballed in the middle innings? Ole Miss gave up six and then four in the fifth and sixth innings over 10 runs over two innings there for the Tigers to move away and take game one. It was probably still a loss, but at least manageable until that point. So back at it tonight. Just think about baseball. They don't have much very long to ponder on it and to worry about it. Again, 7 o'clock tonight. First pitch from Alex Box Stadium. So a little on that today. Some other things. We'll look at how North Carolina's handling a certain aspect of their NCAA situation. They're targeting the main man in the SEC, trying to get him removed from anything to do with their case. So that and more on
smart move.
You think it's a good move?
I mean, I think they're screwed, but it's a smart move.
They also are just continuing to kick said can down said road as far as possible.
Well, it's not hurting them.
Just got a championship.
Yeah, I was going to say it looked like they were cutting down nets not long ago.
Yeah, so.
I think the NCAA, and we'll get to it in a minute, I think the way that the NCAA is designed is so flawed. I'm shocked that here we sit in 2017 and there hasn't been a move of the Power Five programs that make money to pull away and go, we got to do this differently. You're not going to change society.
No, and you're going to become less, don't even know the word, but you're the fundamentals by which you try to operate are going to become more and more obsolete by each passing month, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's transitioning the other direction as hard as possible.
I've on record saying you should pull them out, make them essentially a minor leagues, pay them, regulate the payments, tax the payments. Just get real. The whole college athletics, the purity of college athletics thing is, as it pertains to football and at the very minimum, men's basketball is a complete hypocritical joke. Stop. It's silly. I'm not advocating academic fraud at North Carolina either. I'm also not surprised that schools like North Carolina and every other school in the Power Five recruit lots and lots of kids to play these sports that really have no business academically being in college. So, of course, they get. I think North Carolina is the only school in the country that has fake classes for athletes?
Probably not.
I mean, remember back in the day when all the athletes majored in general studies? What the hell do you think that meant? What'd you get your degree in? General studies? When was the last time you met a professional general studier?
Doesn't that just mean three minors? Isn't that what general studies means?
But when someone says, what's your degree? What is your degree in? I don't know. What's your specialty? I don't really have one.
A little of this, a little of that.
So what did you train to do? Football? I'm not being critical. I'm saying the system's flawed. They're not coming there for academics. They're there as football players. They're put on paths, timetables, schedules that are not typical of a college student at all. Not even a little bit. And if you believe in the 20-hour rule, God help you.
Yeah, if the 20-hour rule was a fact, Clemson wouldn't need a nap room in their field house.
Exactly. The truth is these guys get up in the off season at 5 in the morning, and they're running at 5:30, and they're lifting at 6, and they go to class, and they go to meetings, and they don't have time for a job. They don't have time for reality. Of course they need to be paid. And are you going to get rid of all of the fraud? Well, no, any more than you're going to get rid of all the fraud in any walk of life.
Oh, right.
But you can get more realistic about things.
Yeah. So look at that individual situation in a second. First, as always, podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. Use that plenty card. Go in, sign up for the plenty card, come out, use it at the pump every time, use it at the cash register when you're checking out in the convenience store. You earn points, you save money. Hulu, Nationwide, American Express, Rite Aid, and more are providers that help out with that plenty card as well. So any of those you use, you will save money along the way. Lunch specials, ribs on the weekend, whatever you got coming up. Let the Oxford Exxon help with that. Critical locations throughout the state of Mississippi, up and down I-55, and in North Mississippi as well. And we're coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. Call that number. Go to that website. Tell Corey Clark what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote. And then let Clark Ford, Corey and the people at Clark Ford, do for you what they've done for people all over the South, from Missouri to Arkansas to Texas, Louisiana, all over Mississippi and more. Let's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. They go right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It is a phenomenally easy, pleasant way to purchase a car. Let Corey and them show you how it is done. It's Clark Ford, Inc., or 662-257-1900. And at the end of your car buying purchase experience, say, "Hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast." You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden podcast. There's a Beer Garden dropping later today. You can mention either one of those. It's $500 off the bottom line at Clark Ford in Amory.
So I'm reading from the AP here. We'll start here. We'll get to baseball, but you all know how it went. There's no reason to analyze the crap out of it. So
okay.
I'm going to read a couple paragraphs, and then we'll kind of dissect it from there. First, Neil, what do you recall about the sociology thing at Auburn with the potential academic issues, 06, somewhere in there?
Very vague in my clouded brain.
Okay.
There were allegations, if I recall correctly, that guys got grades in sociology classes that they did not take.
Yeah, it eventually got pushed down to just secondary violations, but there was the thought that it was academic fraud that got pushed under the table, honestly.
And it probably was academic fraud. Again,
you're not going to rule that out.
Oh, if you made me guess, how many Power 5 schools are there?
I don't know, 60-something.
Let's call it 60.
Okay.
If you told me that academic fraud occurred at half of them as it pertains to athletes, I wouldn't bat an eye, would you?
No. An attorney in North Carolina's ongoing academic scandal wants Southeastern Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey removed as head of the NCAA infractions panel hearing the case because of a conflict of interest. Raleigh attorney Elliot Abrams wrote the NCAA this month saying Sankey, quote, has a personal, professional, and institutional interest in the outcome of the case involving his client, Deborah Crowder, a retired UNC officer administrator. He compared Sankey's involvement to the commissioner of the SEC refereeing a championship game between an ACC and an SEC team, unquote. He also described Sankey as a potential witness regarding a previous case at Auburn during his time as an SEC associate commissioner that had similarities but did not lead to major violations. In a second letter Tuesday, Abrams stated the third notice of allegations outlining charges against Crowder and UNC should be tossed out. He called it the result of inappropriate pressure from a conflicted hearing panel, adding that the entire panel is tainted by Sankey's involvement and should be recused.
I agree with him. I don't even know everything about it, and I agree. If you have to send out a third letter, your investigation's flawed. Three letters? What the hell? Get it right.
I'm amazed by this. I'm going to keep reading. Abrams provided the Associated Press with copies of both letters. The requests are part of the latest snag in an oft-delayed case featuring five top-level charges first filed nearly 2 years ago. SEC spokesman Herb Vincent deferred questions Wednesday to the NCAA, blown away by that. According to a statement provided
by
the NCAA spokeswoman,
you must go to the NCAA.
According to Emily James, on behalf of the committee, the membership, quote, continues to believe a committee with representatives from across the membership with the public is the most appropriate way to resolve infractions cases.
Yeah.
Continuing the quote, the committee is confident the members who comprise the hearing panel appropriately represent the committee and do not have conflicts.
No.
As the panel reviews ongoing cases, it's important to note that the panel will decide the case based on the full record, not just the information made available in public statements.
So true.
UNC spokesman Joel Curran declined comment.
Because he can't comment. Because if he comments, he gets in trouble. You get sent to the principal's office if you comment.
As you were saying, the two paragraphs that catch everybody up a little bit, the academic case is tied to the irregularities in the formerly named African and Afro-American Studies Department. Most notably, there were independently study-style courses misidentified as lecture classes that did not meet and required a research paper or two, courses featuring significant athletic enrollments and typically offering high grades.
Happens everywhere.
The NCAA reopened its investigation in summer 2014 and first charged UNC in a notice of allegations filed in May 15. It then revised the charges in a second version last April and then changed them again in December. UNC's response to the
what
charges...
What year are we in?
17, last I checked. UNC's response to the charges is on hold as Abrams says he is working to set up an interview for Crowder after she had previously refused to speak with the investigators. Crowder, former office administrator who graded many of the papers, defended the quality of the regular courses in a March affidavit. Okay, that was kind of stupid, but I get it. No timeline for that, blah, 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 blah. In seeking Sankey's removal, Abrams' April 4 letter stated he could be a witness to discuss the NCAA investigation at Auburn tied to an independent study courses in 05 and 06. In that case, the NCAA investigated claims that an Auburn sociology professor was helping football players and other athletes stay eligible through the courses that required little or no class time.
Happens everywhere.
The NCAA determined in 08 that Auburn didn't commit academic fraud and found only secondary violations. The UNC guy says that these two cases have been handled differently and with preferential treatment.
Preferential treatment. That's shocking. Because I wouldn't think that would happen in something as pure and clean as intercollegiate athletics. I would not believe that there would be preferential treatment. I don't think that happens. I don't believe.
So here's the thing with this. Look, first,
treated better than others.
Let's keep this from a complete, overall, nuanced way.
Yeah, I'm doing the best I can.
First, look, the lawyer is just doing his job of pushing everything and creating every loophole and every potential situation that could happen.
He's protecting his client.
He's been told, hey, drag this thing out as long as possible and muddy this thing up as much as you can muddy it. Throw dirt everywhere. So that's what he's doing in some part, because some of this is strictly legal posturing. There's no doubt that's true.
Yeah.
However, he is also identifying so many issues with this situation at the same time.
Here's the problem for UNC. It's a problem for Ole Miss. When your argument is
everyone else does it too,
Mom, that typically doesn't go well with a bunch of academics all emboldened in a room. This is not a committee of your peers. This is a committee basically of elitists.
I mean, looking at Ole Miss's list, I don't have it in front of me. You had one basketball coach and a couple of ADs, and then everybody else was either private sector successful people or academics.
I mean, I guess there's a possibility. Forgive my language for what's coming. So if you're I guess there's a possibility that Bobby Crimmins is on the committee and at some point goes, holy shit, this happens everywhere. They did what? They let a kid sleep. But okay, I did that.
Yeah, Crimmins did not exactly have a pristine record at Tech from a NCAA standpoint.
No, I mean, they recruited at a pretty high level. I mean, I guess he – I guess – I don't know. I mean – I remember when you might not have ever done this at Hatley. You were such a good student. I don't know. Did you ever go home to Mom and say, hey, I made a 62 on the test, but Mom, everybody failed. Probably happened at some point
in young
Mr. Anthony Parham's life.
Certainly in college, probably. Hey, the curve was 71. I mean,
come on, that test was ridiculous. typically, I don't know how your mother might have said, well, bless your sweet soul. Typically, it's you should have studied more. Did you study? Did you? That it never goes well. I have a certain fear for Ole Miss that this is where this is headed. Well, the investigators weren't fair to us. The investigators weren't honest. You better prove you didn't do this. North Carolina's problem.
Yeah, they haven't been honest.
No, they haven't.
No.
There, that's true. I don't know that. I don't know. I don't know. When everybody goes, well, here's what's going to happen. The sanctions have been, I don't buy that.
No.
And in North Carolina's case, their problem is they've yet to prove that this academic fraud did not occur. And now they're vilifying Greg Sankey, which I get. The commissioner of the SEC should not be involved in a case involving an ACC school. An ACC school that the SEC would love to add, by the way. I mean, can anyone honestly say that Greg Sankey does not have an agenda? I'm not saying he does, but there's an appearance of an agenda.
Yeah, it's been completely boggled,
and that's what happens.
I mean, it would be the equivalent, and again, I'm getting them mixed up on which one they revised. It would be them coming out a month from now and going, "Hey guys, that Ole Miss NOA, we're gonna change some stuff." You know. You're right. That first time we did the NOA, y'all kind of proved that wasn't true. We think it's true again. We're going to put that back in now again.
It's exactly the same
thing. So respond to that again. It's like,
and that's why I say, what year is this?
It's the NFL. It's Goodell. It's judge and executioner all in the same group that just makes their own rules and flirts with it how they see fit.
Well, it's not. It you know what it lacks? Professionalism.
But oversight.
Yeah, well, it's like the Major League Baseball. With the Cardinals and the Astros thing and the computer deal. They investigated that. The FBI has prosecuted it, and Major League Baseball has issued its punishment. I mean, I don't think it was nearly hard enough because they didn't shut the Cardinals down, but regardless, they've done it. It's over. What in the hell is taking so long? The people in North Carolina have to be furious. 7-8 year investigation? So by the time you issue punishment, eventually, the kids that are in the program were like in the third grade when this stuff happened. Give me a freaking break, man. By the time the Ole Miss stuff gets done, it's over a 2013 class that everyone got worked up over. And at the end of it, what did they find? Laramie Tunsil's stepdad got some money from a booster.
$800.
I mean, which is a violation. I think Laramie slept on Chris Kiffin's floor or couch or somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere in his residence.
And Austin Golson got to go hunting on some private land that Bobby Dunlap owned. Don't give me the you shouldn't mention names, Neil. I'm so sick of that I could scream. I get that email every time I say names. So those are violations. That's it from the 2013 class. And here we are, and this deal's going to come down late 2017, barring a delay. And if you're willing to bet completely against another delay, God bless you. You are a risky son of a gun.
Yeah,
5 years.
It's affecting a dude that's probably a freshman in 18, potentially.
Yeah, so how old was that kid in 2013 when this stuff got started?
Seventh, eighth grade?
You're punishing dudes that were in middle school.
Dude that probably couldn't tell you the town Ole Miss was in seventh grade.
No.
I think Greg Little could give you an Ole Miss history in 2000.
I don't think he could give you one today.
Yeah.
But no. The process is flawed. And I'm not the guy going, Ole Miss should get away with this, because I'm not. I mean, I don't know. Let's see. But I don't think they're going to. I'm on record as saying that. Been on that record for a while.
It's nuts.
Because with the end of the day, when your argument is, well, everyone else does it, that is a losing argument. especially in that type of
Look, it's we're going in circles. It is what it is. They've got to fight the failure to monitor for freeze. They got to fight the LOIC, and they've got to prove that whatever corroboration that the NCAA has on the Leo Lewis stuff is not 100% the way the NCAA investigators see it, period. That's going to decide this.
I agree completely.
Those three things. Everything else is in the clouds. Yeah. I don't care.
They're not fighting over Golson going hunting.
No, it doesn't matter.
I guess they might fight over the Rebel Rags thing.
Okay. Yeah, but that kind of plays into the other, though. At the end of the day, the NCAA investigators are trying to prove that there is a systemic connection between coaches, players, and boosters.
And here's the problem that's different. People go, well, it's like a court of law.
No.
The difference is Ole Miss is going to have to prove.
You're guilty until innocent, not the other
way
around.
You have to prove your innocence. Not, hey, well, there's not a – you didn't prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. That's not what this is.
No, you've got to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
And you're not getting in a – you're not going in front of a committee of jurors pulled from the community that – represent all sorts.
No, the NCAA said it is an absolute representative of the situation of your peers.
Yeah, it's 100% academia.
Increments.
Who's, again, going to say, that's it?
Well, and like the some dude.
You know what? I gave Nick Anderson to come to Georgia Tech.
And some person that's like a federal government employee, the regulatory.
Yeah.
The federal something.
Yeah.
There's some private sector people, too.
I mean, I have this mental image of Bobby Crimmins going, let me tell y'all what I did to get Dennis Scott. Because everybody was recruiting Dennis Scott.
Yeah, look, he might not say it, but you know Crimmins is going to be sitting in that room one point going, almost kind of like looking over at Ross or somebody and kind of winking going, dude.
I went to Brooklyn once and got Kenny Anderson. Let me tell you how that went down.
Yeah, I coached the Georgia Institute of Technology. We went.
I took Georgia Tech to the Final Four. Now, let me tell you. I did not do that by recruiting potential engineers. All right? So here's what we did. Let me tell you about the recruitment of Dennis Scott and Nick Anderson. Neither of them were interested in engineering.
It would really be a good like sitcom thing of like the old coach on the COI board and he just did all the cases.
I mean, I keep thinking Crimmins will go, that's it? God, I wish I could have gotten a kid by just letting him go hunting. Do you know how many alums I had to hit up for Kenny Anderson?
Yeah.
Let's just say my knees were dirty.
I'm sorry. I had a segue and I couldn't do it. No, I can't. All right.
No, come on, Nick. You got to do it now.
Podcast brought to you in part by Master Cuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company that serves the Oxford, Tupelo, and surrounding area, founded on two simple philosophies. We've been telling you to do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it. They have an open and honest communication with their customers as well as employees. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of the services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and more. They do holiday lighting also for your yard during the holiday season if you'd like that. So if your yard's not up to par, give MasterCuts a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, MasterCutsLawn.com. If you sign up for an annual contract and mention you heard it on the podcast, get the first cut free. Again, I use them. I've used several different yard people over the years, and I'm with them for a reason. So give them a call again or MasterCutsLawn.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site. He'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you're looking for. Then send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company, 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford. It's the place to go for all of your bedding needs. They've got all the brand names you know and love, Tempur-Pedic, Serta, Jameson. It's all there. Linens, mattress protectors, bed frames, delivery and setup options. It's all there at Snooze. Get in touch with Jacob Williams and the people there. It's gosnooze.com. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. Just off Interstate 55 in, you might have guessed, Grenada. They've got a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans, great lease deals. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about it here on the podcast. and you'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. The website, GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So, last night, again, there's not really a lot to say. I mean, you had a top 10 pick in Alex Lang that really had a curveball working, maybe the best off-speed pitch that Ole Miss will see this season. He located it. He located his fastball 93 to 95 miles an hour, and that's pretty tough to hit when that happens. It is what it is. I'm not shocked that Alex Lang handcuffed Ole Miss for how many ever innings he did it last night.
His curveball's really good, and he throws hard. And when you don't hit his fastball, it's over.
Yeah, you can't wait on the curveball and try to hit it.
Well, no, there aren't too many people that hit.
And it's like this big 12-6 loopy thing that just breaks it.
There aren't many major league hitters that hit that. I watched Kyle Schwarber yesterday against Ryu of the Dodgers, who has that 12-6 curve. He just watched it.
It's my favorite pitch to watch.
Yeah.
He just watched 12-6 curveball is my favorite pitch to watch.
He just watched it and hoped it went out of the zone. Because you're not hitting it unless it hangs.
LSU got to James McArthur fast. His fastball was up in the zone. His breaking ball was kind of non-existent. Couldn't locate it. Couldn't change planes with his pitches. And LSU did what good teams had the potential to do. They scored four runs over the first four innings. They were up 4-0. And then, again, the fourth spot in the fifth, the sixth spot in the sixth, and one more in the seventh for good measure. Again, Ole Miss scores two in the ninth. But not much really to look at from a offensive standpoint for Ole Miss. Again, Zabowski, a couple RBIs on that hit in the ninth inning, but just couldn't get much going. Tim Rowe had two hits. Again, good news. They get to play again today at 7 o'clock. It resets. Kids are pretty resilient, but I do think it's a big night mentally for Ole Miss. You hear all week that since you've been born, plus almost you being born again, they haven't won a series in that stadium. Or in that town, they've had two stadiums, I guess. And you get popped like that on that first night. The game's over so fast. To me, though, in a way, it was over so fast, you probably could kind of get all the frustration out while the game was still going on. You kind of get over it even by the ninth inning at that point.
I've said many times I'd rather get beat 15-1, 15-2. I'd rather get blown out where you're over it. The game was over, what, fifth, sixth inning?
I mean, it was 4-0 after four, and then it was, yeah, 8-0 after five.
So you have an hour and a half to get past it. By the end of that game, people are already thinking about the next game. That game's over.
Go get some pizza and call it a day.
It's over. I'd rather lose like that than lose 2-1 and 11, where you go to bed that night remembering a pitch, a play, and
nothing that would change anything.
Climb in the bed, go to sleep.
Yeah.
Get up in the morning and do it again. No one's going, hey, you know, if we could have just – it's like I saw someone ask Mike last night. I'm not picking on the question because they're trying to write something. Hey, if that play at second gets kind of made, is it different? And he's like, well, I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't know. No. When you get beat by 13 runs, nobody at the end of that game is going, you know, we had them right where we wanted them. It's just easy to move on. Now, to your point, tonight, first three innings, really critical. You got to get in the game. You need to get ahead. You need to be tied. You don't need to fall down 3-0 tonight in the second inning where there is a temptation in your mind to go, oh, God, here we go again.
No, David Parkinson's got to go. He needs to throw 3-0 to start this game. Give that offense a time through the order. Because, look, here's the scary part for Ole Miss. Look, Lang's the best pitcher. No doubt about that. Lang is the best pitcher they're going to face this weekend. He's one of the best in the country. I mean, Chase McArthur 2 weeks in a row is drawing Alex Lang and Tanner Houck next week for Missouri. Those are the two games in a row for him. But anyway, matchup-wise, however, and I get Lang's right-handed and Ole Miss has a lot of right-hander, I mean, you know, and all that. Poche's a tougher matchup for Ole Miss tonight. Left-handed kid. Can throw hard enough, can really get streaky. Poche is the kid that Matt was talking about on the podcast. He went 31 and something innings to start the year before he gave up a run. He was one pitch away from two straight no-hitters to open the year. He's very streaky. He gets very confident and then just gets on a roll. his left-handed off-speed stuff, it can be really, really good. Ole Miss does not hit left-handers particularly well, even though they have a right-handed dominant lineup. Tim Rowe, who's been a spark plug for Ole Miss, left-handed bat that I just don't expect to have a lot of success against Poche. It doesn't really fit the profile there. So you got to scrap tonight. It's going to be a tough night for Ole Miss. You can win the game because it's baseball and anybody can beat anybody on a given night, but it's going to be really up to Parkinson. He's got to give them some early momentum to try to get at Poche potentially a second time through the order.
Yeah, they're going to have to grind one out tonight. That's sometimes that's kind of the MO, though, for a team like this. Grind one out, and if you were to do it, again, as I said all along, if you get to Saturday 1-1, it's a win.
Yeah, take your chances against Eric Walker and call it a weekend.
Tell me what happens in the first three innings tonight, and I can give you a much better clue of where they're going. You're blown out tonight, and tomorrow gets scary.
Because it was an LSU team that didn't have a lot of confidence coming in. I mean, they had that big comeback against Arkansas, but they haven't hit the ball particularly well. They haven't scored runs. They had some veterans that were struggling. Last night, you let DePlantis, get four hits. Kramer Robertson got a couple things started. Their veterans rolling last night. Jared Poche on the season, 6-1, 2.32 ERA. He's thrown 50 innings. He has struck out only 33-12, so a little bit fewer strikeouts than I expected. But, again, 13 earned runs in 50 innings, and, again, only walked 12, so that's not much help there. You're going to have to hit him.
The other thing was when you're on defense at LSU and your pitcher is getting out of three innings with 34 pitches, you're pretty happy. You're alert. You're bouncing around. You get to go hit. He's throwing strikes. Ball's getting put in play. He's striking people out quickly. He's not doing these long 8-10 pitch at bats and walking people and throwing over to first base 17 times. He was very efficient, and their bats got to go hit. And you get confident when you do that as a baseball player.
It's also not rule out that Ole Miss in the last two games have committed five or six errors. Their path is to win close games. That defense is not acceptable. They can't be that. They've got to be better defensively. They've got to be clean, especially down there.
They got to be elite defensively to beat good teams. Got to be elite.
Just giving away runs right now.
Can't, and they're not good enough to give away runs against anybody, really. Good team, certainly not.
All six runs in the sixth inning were unearned.
Well, I know this is going to be breaking. That's not the path.
There could have been an error in the fifth that led to a bunch of earned runs.
Not the path to winning baseball.
One of the stranger lines you'll see, Connor Green last night, one inning pitched, so got three outs, two hits, two walks, six runs, all earned.
There's no telling what's going on.
The roof almost caved into the Clark Ford studio a second ago.
Kids are home.
It's a weird line.
Yeah. But when you don't score until the ninth inning, and you don't, you know what I mean? It's just it's just hard to – it is what it is. You move on. You scrap it. That's one that you throw in the trash can. Everybody knows you can't play. Everybody that got on that bus last night to go back to the hotel knows they can't play defense like that and win in Baton Rouge.
Are on the moon. I mean, it.
Yeah. Well, you can't give up six unearned runs in a game and expect to win said game. Throw that game in the trash. But tonight's a big game for the psyche of that team. Because as you know better than I do, not only do you have to play two more games at LSU, but your first SEC game after Baton Rouge is against a top 10 pick. Who you're not, unless he goes out and beats himself, you're not scoring a lot of runs that night either.
That's what we talked about a couple weeks ago when you had all those opportunities to kind of get a little bit of breathing room, and they didn't do that because, yeah, it's Missouri and him on Friday, and then go to Arkansas, then go to Florida, and you just look up, and I mean, every time it's tough. Tough league.
Yes.
Real tough league.
It's a really tough baseball league.
I mean,
breaking.
Yeah. So, whatever. That's where they are, though. Again, Ole Miss, LSU tonight, 7 o'clock, and then 2 o'clock tomorrow on Saturday for the finale. So, you watched a little last night, then. You've seen...
Well, you tell me about his curveball, and so I went and looked at it.
It's good.
I would have just stood in the box and watched it. Admired its beauty, hoped that it went out of the zone. You're not hitting that thing.
Yeah,
what, David said it weeks ago. I mean, we've dissected it 4,000 times because that's what we do. You have to hit fastballs. When you get them, you have to hit them with authority. And when you don't and you get behind in the count against the top 10 hitter pitcher who's going to go early in the Major League Baseball draft, who's got a very plus-plus curveball, well, that's not the recipe for winning.
You can beat him on days he hangs it.
Yeah.
And on the days he doesn't hang it, you better hit the fastball.
And when he does hang it, you have to hit it. And when it's on, like it was last night, it's hard. He's going to beat most people last night. There's a reason that a baseball team's going to give him several million dollars in June. They're not doing it because they think he's cute or they like his mom.
See this thing Eli's having to deal with?
Saw something about it, but I didn't. I thought it was a. Is it true?
Reading from ESPN, Eli Manning turned over a potentially incriminating email earlier this month in connection with a lawsuit that claims the quarterback, the New York Giants, and a team of equipment manager, knowingly provided false game-worn memorabilia to collectors. The email was included in a court filing in Bergen County, New Jersey, Superior Court by the plaintiffs, collectors Eric Inselberg, Michael Jacob, and Shane something, who first filed suit 3 years ago. On April 27, 2010, Manning sent an email to Giants head equipment manager Joe Skiba asking for two helmets that could pass as game used. The email was initiated after Manning was sent a note by Alan Zucker, his marketing agent throughout his career, to come up with some equipment to satisfy his obligation to provide such materials to sports memorabilia company Steiner Sports. The plaintiff's lawyer, Brian Brook of Clinton, Brook, and Peed, told ESPN the email, including roughly 200 pages of documents Manning produced as part of legal discovery, was key to specifically linking the quarterback to the lawsuit, which alleges an elaborate scheme to produce, pass off, and sell memorabilia as game used that was not. Prior to that email, the lawsuit had only included alleged conversation between Manning and Skiba. Just looking for high points here because it's fairly long. The suit also alleges the Giants were complicit by deleting the email from their accounts. New York Post first said this. Brooks said that based on what he believes was the Giants' cooperation with authorities, his client, Inselberg, was one of six memorabilia dealers indicted for selling fake game and used items after an FBI investigation. The charges against Inselberg were dropped, where the Justice Department admitted it lacked evidence, and Inselberg, believing his reputation was greatly damaged, then filed a lawsuit against the Giants. The Giants conducted an internal investigation in 2011.
So this goes way back.
Yeah, the lawsuit claims other allegedly fake items included ones described by game used by Manning, O.C. Umanura, and Tiki Barber. Does say at the end, it's not likely Manning, the Giants, or any employees would be subject to criminal prosecution for the actions.
Greg Sankey says, see, sometimes it just takes a while to get to the bottom of these things.
I don't know. It's a plaintiff summary, so we'll see. I'm not really making any judgments here one way or the other, just reporting the news.
The memorabilia business, I'm guessing, is a little squirrely sometimes.
I mean, put OJ in jail.
It did that.
Which is a hell of a feat.
It was an accomplishment.
See, you might get a TV show when it gets out later this year. What?
A TV show doing what?
I don't know. I saw something about him getting a TV show.
How old's O.J. Simpson now?
He doesn't look real good.
He looks rough. I'm guessing prison life is not...
He didn't look as good as he looked in like the Hertz commercials or whatever back in the day.
No.
69 years old.
69.
July 9th, 1947. Birthday for O.J. Simpson.
He's supposed to get out later this year, potentially?
I saw something. Yeah, hold on.
If you're on a parole hearing, you're on a parole board, do you let O.J. Simpson out? I mean, for the crime he was convicted of, he probably deserves another chance.
It's really hard to find this because searching O.J. Simpson in TV show was a really bad move on my part. A lot of stuff popped up. So
yeah, a few things. Why don't you search JFK plus TV? That'll get you there.
Okay, here we go. I think I found it. I don't know what this is from, but anyway. According to TMZ, we've read from TMZ two straight days here with Sinclair Golson and now O.J. Simpson.
Why not?
69-year-old is currently serving 33 years behind bars for kidnapping, robbery, and assault, but could be let out as early as October for good behavior just 9 years into his sentence. But according to TMZ, some producers are eyeing the former football star for the small screen and could rush to sign him up when he's released. The website also approached several other producers and TV companies about the rumors, and while all wanted to remain anonymous, several approved of the idea, saying the documentary interview show would be the most likely format.
What do you think the reaction would be if O.J. Simpson got out of jail, admitted to the murders?
Well, he already has, basically, in a book.
No, but I mean, but I don't mean basically in a book. I mean admits to it. I did it.
I mean, it's not, but...
What would the reaction be?
Well, a lot of people go, yeah.
Not as much. Back in the day, there was tons of defiance. Now, I think even the people who were defiant are like, yeah, he probably did it. No, he did do it. Might have had help.
You've read all this, and you're still 100% sure?
Yeah. Okay. The only thing I'm not sure of was, did he have help? And if he had help, I'm pretty sure I know who the help was.
Who?
His son.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Did you believe Gilbert's book?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I found it to be very believable, didn't you?
Yeah. It was probably the best thing I've read on the subject, his agent.
Yeah, I closed that and said, man, there you go.
Yeah.
That's probably what happened.
Because he didn't, the thing with Gilbert is he didn't try to get himself off the hook.
No.
He just told what he believed to be the truth, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think he was one of the people that felt some responsibility for not having helped years earlier.
Well, I mean, yeah, the title of the book is How I Helped O.J. Commit Murder or something.
Yeah, it wasn't a snap deal. It didn't happen overnight. He didn't go from having a perfectly pleasant day to, hey, I'm going to go kill her.
And the dude basically, I mean, the sports agent even, I mean, I think he lost his wife and the whole deal. I mean.
Yeah.
Didn't go well.
No.
All the stuff about all the items and property that are hidden in storage facilities throughout the country.
Still hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The storage sheds in Florida got O.J. crap in them.
That really belonged to the Goldmans and the Browns. Stuff should be sold and the money should be given to them.
One of the most fascinating stories of any lifetime. Just...
Oh. One of those deals that's remarkable.
Here we are. We discussed Eli Manning and somehow got over to... But I don't know. I mean, I'm going to... It's that deal where I have a hard time taking anything into account from a plaintiff statement or anything from one side in a court.
Sure.
Hearing, whatever.
It's like we started off going full circle with the comment from the attorney in Raleigh. That's one side. I would love to hear from Sankey. And at some point, you'd like to see that case go to court in the same way that I want to see what happens in Indianapolis with Ole Miss. Ole Miss is going to get an opportunity to defend itself.
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like to see Leo Lewis in that boardroom in Indianapolis. Part of the problem is that there's no, like the boosters in question, we were told the boosters won't be there. Well, they should be there.
Yeah, they can only submit information through the school or however that works.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way to do it. Put the people on a stand. No one's going to jail. Let's get to the bottom of it. You're not taking anyone's freedom. Let's get to the bottom of it. Let's find out what really happened. I don't think that's too much to ask. Get Leo Lewis in there. Who paid you the money? This is who paid me the money. Who else paid you money? Take us through your recruiting. Let's get real here. So much cover up and subterfuge and stuff. It's a really bad look. My opinion. The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide. They offer all the technology and products you can want with the personal touch. OUB also has the absolute best free checking account you'll find anywhere. It's called Kasasa. It comes complete with cash back or interest options. If you have a Kasasa account, OUB will refund your ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast is also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael a call. He's a realtor. He specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Go to his site, gotland.com. That's got-land.com. Check out his track record, customer testimonials, see what's listed, and there is a very It's just a very active land purchasing and land selling market in Mississippi right now. You want an expert. You want someone who loves the outdoors, who lives his product, and that's Michael Oswalt. Give him a call, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Right Way Meds, located in Holly Springs. Wherever you are, let them deliver your medicine to your door. Whether it's a deal where you need your medication managed, they can help you out with that because it comes in strip packets where you tear off the first dose of the day, next dose ready when you are. Makes it easy and can help save lives in the process. Also, if you just don't want to spend the time to go to the pharmacy, again, they deliver it, so let them help you out. 662-252-8913, 662-252-8913, rightwaymeds.com. Also, if you're a doctor or a medical provider, they help with compliance numbers there as well. So right time, right way for you. Today's Pete Rose's birthday, you know?
Is that right? It's also the anniversary of the Lincoln assassination. Big day, April the...
Today is the... Really?
Today's April 14th, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Almost tax time.
Well, now you have to go ruin everything. You have to depress everyone.
It's a reminder. Really, it's a public service is what it is.
Do you catch up on your taxes?
Better.
They're not coming to get you.
No. I don't owe enough to be criminal or anything.
No.
It's all good.
You're going to pay it.
Eventually, you have to pay it. I mean,
quit stressing out over stuff like that a long time ago. I just said, you know what? If you're going to come bust me because I'm a couple of days late, well... That jail's going to be really crowded.
Yeah, something says I'm not what they're worried about. Just have a hunch.
I'm just guessing. And if you are, again, it is going to be really... You're going to stand in the processing line for a long
time. Oh, the world's
time.
A great place if I should really be paranoid about a couple days on some taxes here or there.
Yeah. You got real faith in society.
The Mariners have had to limit sales of their toasted grasshoppers.
Ran out.
Yeah.
Would you eat one?
Yeah. I don't get scared by food. I'll try anything.
As long as it's not a banana.
What happened?
I don't know, man. Can't do it.
The Mariners have called in an emergency order, so they last through the weekend. They're also imposing a per-game order limit for the rest of the season, toasted grasshoppers.
They must be good.
They've sold 18,000 so far.
18,000 grasshoppers or 18,000 orders of grasshoppers?
I don't know. That's more than the restaurant that runs the stand sells in a year, by the way.
Take me out to the ball game. Buy me some peanuts and grasshoppers. I don't care if I ever get back. Isn't that how the song goes?
I'd rather have a grasshopper than a Cracker Jack.
Yeah, I don't like Cracker Jack at all. Not my thing.
Just give me regular popcorn for doing that.
Just give me a bag of peanuts and a beer, and I'm good.
You and the peanuts.
I like peanuts. I can do that. I'm fine. Frankly, you can just give me a beer, and I'm good.
You mentioned bananas. I make the correlation. Told you last night, you used a Jonathan Howard recipe for the daiquiri.
Oh, yeah.
I recommend that. So if anybody's...
What kind of rum did you use?
I just used regular light Bacardi.
Okay.
Mainly because it's the only thing I had.
Yeah,
that sure. was the reasoning for that. I don't necessarily know if light or dark is better for it, but...
I can't remember what the recipe called for.
He said any rum, I thought.
Okay.
But I think... I might need to go back and look at that, honestly. But he called for 2 ounces of rum, 3/4 of an ounce of lime juice, and then either sugar or 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, I believe was the way it went. And I used a little more rum than that. I went to 2.5 just to get a little more flavor because it was very, very... That lime juice cuts.
It's tart.
Yeah, it cuts so much you can't really taste anything else if you don't kind of ramp up the alcohol a little bit, but... Put it in the shaker, shake it up with some ice, strain it into a glass that's been chilled. And
call it's good,
it
huh?
Yeah, it's good. I like daiquiris, though. You know, it's my thing. So.
I do, too.
If I'm not in a bourbon mood, a daiquiri is my favorite cocktail.
I'm never going to be the guy that makes fun of people for having a daiquiri or whatever hanging out at the beach. That whole, you can't do that, that makes you...
But again, this isn't that frozen machine crap daiquiri,
though. No, of course
though.
Not. I mean, it's good stuff.
This is just a... I mean, it has 3 ingredients. It's not
sludge. I love nothing more than a margarita with fresh squeezed lime that's well made with like good tequila and good
Cointreau. I'm not a big tequila guy, so the margarita doesn't do as much for me.
Oh, I love it.
I'd rather have a daiquiri or a mojito.
I love a good mojito. Big fan.
Big fan.
And light daiquiris too. I'm easy to please, man. You could come out to me as I float around in the pool and say, which one do you want? Which one do you got?
Start with one, go to the other one.
Whatever. Just keep them coming. We'll be good.
But I haven't tried all his recipes. I've kind of meant to, and just the opportunity presented itself for that one, so I decided to take it.
That's really what I want to do. I want to go just float in a pool somewhere. Detached
you
from society.
You don't have to go far.
No, I can go out there. But it gets loud out there. And people come out and go, hey, Dad, can you take me to...
Yeah, that's not detached from society.
No, I want to go float someplace in the Caribbean.
You really like your islands.
I love an island. And I want like there to be food and drinks there.
We don't want to be Castaway or Gilligan, but...
No, although they always seem to be able to...
Never mind, yeah. Bad example.
Yeah.
We've been there.
They always had alcohol available. Drank it out of the coconut shells.
Well, they had all the money in the world.
Never had mosquitoes or anything.
Oh. Nobody got like typhoid fever.
No, nobody ever got sick, really.
Dangest thing.
Everybody was always clean, well shaven.
I get it, and there's a certain nostalgia that makes you laugh or whatever, but good God at some of the TV shows, yeah. And just going, that makes no sense.
Did you ever watch Leave It to Beaver?
I mean, I've seen reruns.
I watched Leave It to Beaver.
But I mean, really, like, Leave It to Beaver, Gilligan's Island, The Brady Bunch.
That damn Eddie Haskell.
I mean, you're not that much older than me. Let me ask, like, was it just, is that what it was like? Just nostalgia, purity, draw? Like, what made those shows entertaining, or was it simply because nobody knew any better?
All of the above. Mostly that nobody
knew. I'm not really
being
critical. I just watch them now, and they don't really hold up. I have a hard time. I mean, maybe it's the same thing as the fact that I can sit here and watch Saved by the Bell because I grew up on it, and it's incredibly stupid, but it'll sit on in front of me, and I kind of laugh.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Did you ever watch the Flintstones much?
Yeah. Watched a good bit of Flintstones. Happy Days.
Wilma or Betty?
Wilma.
Yeah. Sneaky hot.
Wilma.
Wilma's sneaky hot.
I had to think about that one a little more. But
Betty Rubble, she brings a little bit to the table as well. Pebbles, when she grew up, was scorching.
Was she?
Oh.
What were your kid shows when you were little?
Brady Bunch.
Okay.
Marsha Brady.
Yeah.
What was that show? The Facts of Life?
I don't
know. Three's Company.
Okay.
The one with Valerie Bertinelli and the janitor and you know what I'm talking about, don't you? WKRP in Cincinnati. What was the show? His name was, God almighty. Valerie Bertinelli was in it. She was one of the daughters. They lived in a like a high rise, and the maintenance man was like a main character in the show.
One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time.
Okay, I don't know that one at all. Actually,
I remember Good Times. Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
The Flintstones. The Addams Family. The Munsters.
Okay. So Munsters was on Nick at Night at times, you know, because, I mean,
yeah.
See, that's where I'm getting all these shows. Like, I mean, I'm.
And then when I was a kid.
My Nick at Night was Happy Days, Wonder Years.
Yeah. When I was a kid, after school, I would watch PBS. Because when I was a little kid, we didn't have cable yet. I'd watch PBS, and you'd watch Mr. Rogers, The Electric Company with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got, like, what, five channels? ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, something else maybe. Okay. Local access or whatever.
Yeah, networks and then the local stuff.
Yeah. Because I can remember the Monroe CBS affiliate had, that was where we watched the news.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I can remember this vividly. I mean, it's one of the memories of childhood is my dad would come home from work. He taught at Louisiana Tech. And not every night, but frequently he would pop some popcorn and he would get a beer, like a Bud Light or a Miller Light. And they'd turn on the news, the local news at 5 and the national news at 5:30. And I remember the local news, they went to weather. And it was a guy named Jack McCall for years and years and years. And he had a little, I mean, it would be so funny now because people look at it and go, oh, my God, that's horrible. But I remember, and it was like a highlight of it. They had a little, like, remember the character Woodstock from Charlie Brown?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that dude. Get a mental picture. It wasn't exactly Woodstock, but it was like that. And they called him, his name was Freddie. And they'd say, Freddie, give us the weather for tomorrow. And Freddie would walk out on the thing, and he'd look up, and there'd either be like a bright sun, or it'd start with the sun, and then the cloud would come over, or the rain would fall on Freddie or whatever. And that was the weather for the next day. And it was great. And then they'd go to sports with Lanny James. And I always thought Lanny James was like a big-time deal. And turns out he was just the sports dude in Monroe for all those years. And then they go to the national news, and it was like, Dan Rather or whatever.
Which national news did he watch? Who?
CBS.
Okay. So who'd he go with?
He grew up Cronkite.
Okay.
And so Rather.
That's where we go get our news.
Rather replaced Cronkite.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember like finding out Elvis had died allegedly on the national news.
Because everybody was pretty dedicated to their news, dude.
Yeah, and it came on at 5:30, and that's when you watched your news. And late that night, like Ted Koppel might come on or something like that. I get confused with how it went, but there wasn't this 24-hour news cycle that we live in today. It was completely different. You watched the news at 5:30, and then they had the late local news at 10 that went right into Carson or whatever.
Yeah.
And you got up in the morning, and you read the Monroe News Star.
Yeah.
And some people got the Shreveport Times. But we always got the Monroe News Star because my parents grew up in Monroe. That was my memories of that. And then I was like 10, we got cable. And so suddenly the WTBS and WGN came. And suddenly for the first time in my life, you could daily keep up with a team. Braves, Cubs, White Sox to some degree.
That's why everybody became Braves and Cubs fans. Everybody,
that's why all these people down here are Braves and Cubs fans. Because actually where I grew up, the closest team was the Rangers. I mean, you'd be in Arlington in 4 hours.
Yeah. That history lesson brought to you by Neil McCready. We will be back.
That was pretty interesting.
It's good.
You learned some things. You learned about Freddie.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's on here somewhere. I got to find that.
We'll be back, of course, on Monday. I have more coverage to you from baseball throughout the weekend. Whatever happens in Baton Rouge from that. Also, any other news, stay locked in. RebelGrove.com. Thanks for listening all week, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.